All right, so the anatomy. When we talk about the abdomen, what we really are meaning is anything from the rib cage down to the pelvis. So from the diaphragm down to the pelvis is considered abdomen. We have the abdominal muscles on the outside. How many layers are there? Or how many separate muscles?
Three.
So we've got the rectus abdominis, we have the transverse, and then we have the oblique. So the obliques are the ones over here on the sides. The rectus abdominis is the six-pack. The transverse runs sideways and are on the inside, and it helps support the back. So what I want everyone to do is stand up for a moment. And I want you to just let it all hang out. Now, some people are like, I'm letting it all hang out. And that's not what relax. Whew. All right, now, what I want you to think of is I want you to think of your stomach, pulling your stomach in about half an inch to an inch. That's activating your transverse abdominal muscles. And if you do that on a constant basis, you can still breathe. You can even breathe down here, still pulling those in slightly. That'll help support your back, give you better posture. Have a seat. Now, beneath the abdominal muscles, we have organs. Now, organs in the abdomen are divided into two parts, the ones in the front and the ones in the back. Back of what? Front of what? Yes, but what separates them? What separates the front and the back? What separates first class from second class on a plane?
The bathrooms
and a little curtain. Now, there's a little curtain in your body, and what do we call that? The peritoneum. So the peritoneum is what separates the front organs from the back organs. And in fact, the ones that appear behind the peritoneum are called retroperitoneal. Not because they wear clogs and paisley, but because they are behind the peritoneum. I got one laugh out of that one. Now, there are two descriptive schemes to describe the abdomen. One divides the abdomen into four quadrants. So put your finger in your belly button. That is the exact center. So anything above it is called upper abdominal. Anything below it is called lower abdominal. Now, anything to the left of the belly button is considered left. Anything to the right is considered right. So we have four quadrants, left upper, left lower, right lower quadrant. So for a moment, what organ would be in the left upper quadrant? The stomach and spleen. What organ, what big organ would be on the right upper quadrant? The liver. What would be in the left lower quadrant? Not the kidneys so much. Really, we're just talking mostly just intestine. Now, over on the right side, we have that's intestines, and what part of the intestines? Where you have, all right, so you have the appendix. You have the big colon and the little colon, and where they connect, you have the ileocecal junction, and off that is a tiny little guy called an appendix. All right, now that's the four quadrants. There's another way that divides up your abdomen into a tic-tac-toe board. So the upper part is called, going down the middle, the upper part is epigastric. The middle part is called umbilical. The lower part is called suprapubic or hypogastric, but we don't like to call it that. I know, but that's wrong. Suprapubic is really the word that you would use. Now, to the left upper, or to both sides of the center, on the upper, you have what we call the hypochondriac areas. Now, what does chondriac mean? What does osteo mean? Bone. So what does chondro mean? Cartilage. Now, your ribs connect to your sternum via cartilage. So So the hypochondriac is below the cartilage of the rib. Then we have, I can never remember what they want to call this part. And then below that we have left and right inguinal areas. So in picture form, epigastric, umbilical, suprapubic. And then some people say left epigastric, umbilical, left suprapubic. Technically, that's not the correct way to do it, but it's very descriptive, easier to remember. So that's how I would suggest that you do it. What's the difference between these two things? This is more specific than this one. This one is also more complicated. You can use whichever one you like, but you need to be familiar with both because you'll hear both used in healthcare settings. All right, let's talk about history of the abdomen. I'm reversing things today. We're going to do the history first, then we'll talk about the anatomy and physiology. See how you like that. Maybe we'll do them all that way. Maybe we won't. So first thing, I'm going to ask a person about their appetite. Stomach and GI system is the major organ systems of the abdomen. So what is a person's appetite like? Now, what's it called when someone has no appetite? It doesn't want to eat. What do we call someone who's really skinny because they don't eat?
Anorexic.
So anorexia is simply loss of appetite, not eating. Now, we say, oh my gosh, that person's got anorexia. Well, there are anorexia caused by cancers and other diseases, as well as a psychological disorder affecting primarily women called anorexia nervosa. So the word anorexia has nothing to do with a person's psychology. It just means loss of appetite, not eating. Now, anorexia will lead to a condition called cachexia, C-A-C-H-E-X-I-A. Cachexia is when a person becomes emaciated because they're not having enough intake to meet their metabolic demands. So when we say, oh my gosh, she's so anorexic, what we really mean is, oh my gosh, she's so cachectic. So what we're really talking about is the visual sign that a person is not meeting their metabolic needs by eating enough. And that's the cachexia, the emaciating, the wasting away of body tissue because the person doesn't have enough nutrition. All right, the next thing we can ask about is dysphagia, or dysphagia. Means difficulty swallowing. We can ask about abdominal pain, including heartburn, although that's really technically a chest pain. We can ask about nausea and vomiting, and everyone's favorite topic, yeah, bowel habits. Now, there are a lot of elderly people who live by their bowel routine. You know, their day is not complete until they've had a bowel movement. It's just, that's how it is. You know, they're obsessed with their bowels. So you'll get to deal with that some in the hospital. All right. I want to ask about past abdominal history, any diseases, any surgeries. I want to ask about medications. I'm going to do a nutritional assessment. We talked about how to do that during the complete health history. Ask about any personal habits that affect the abdominal region, including exercise, smoking, and cigarettes. And then we're going to get to the actual physical exam. Now, the very first part of the exam is inspection of the abdomen. Then we're going to auscultate after that. Now, why do we auscultate before we palpate or percuss? That's for the carotids, you know, the bruits and the carotids, but not so much for the abdomen. Right, so when we listen, what we're listening for are bowel sounds. If we start poking around on the abdomen, you'll artificially stimulate bowel sounds. So you might cause bowel sounds to be heard that wouldn't ordinarily be there. So you can cause a different finding. The other thing is, what happens if someone comes in and they're in abdominal pain? And you start poking around. Are they going to let you go back with a stethoscope later? No, because you've already hurt them. So you want to do something that's not invasive first. It doesn't hurt to just put a stethoscope on their abdomen. Then later on, when you start poking them, then that's the end of the exam. So the two reasons. Then you can percuss, put optional next to percuss. And we are not going to require that you percuss the abdomen for the checkoff as part of the sequence. At the end, we'll ask you to do it just to so you can show us how it's done. But it's not going to be part of your actual head-to-toe sequence. In the hospital, sometimes surgeons who do abdominal surgeries will percuss their patients after they're done checking for bowel function. Palpation. Palpation is the last part of the exam, and we have three different types of palpation: light, deep, special. Light is checking for tenderness. Deep is checking for masses. And special, checking for organs. What two organs in particular? Liver and spleen. You can also try to palpate for kidneys, but it's very difficult to do except on very skinny people, and it doesn't really tell you much clinically, so we're not going to learn how to do that. So we have light for tenderness, deep for masses, special for liver and spleen. And that's the end of our abdominal exam. Pretty simple, huh? Let's talk about each step in a little more detail. First, we have inspection. We're going to look for the general shape. There are four shapes of abdomens. Now, I know there's more than four, but there's four categories of shapes. The first one, flat. The second one is sunken in. We call that scaphoid. Then we have round. And then the fourth one is called protuberant or distended. Protrude, but protuberant. So protuberant. Protuberant. Distended. So flat is the kind of the normal. You know, even people who are a little overweight, once you get them on their back with gravity pulling things down, they have a flat abdomen. Scaphoid is for that emaciated person. Their abdomen actually goes inwards. Some thinner girls who are not cachectic will also have scaphoid abdomens. It's not necessarily abnormal, but it could be. Well, you're doing it from the rib cage downwards. Round is for those people who are carrying some extra, typically. And then protuberant is when you actually have like a mass, or if you have ascites that is pushing outwards from the abdomen. The hernia itself, no, that would be a hernia, which is the next thing, well, one of the things we're going to look for. All right, we're going to look for any scars. Now, there's two different ways that we can do surgery on the abdomen. We can do what's called open surgeries, where we actually cut open the abdomen, or we can do laparoscopic surgeries. What's a laparoscopic surgery? Okay. So what we do is we poke a couple little holes in their abdomen, we put little tubes in with little claws and pinchers, and we blow up the abdomen with air, so then they act like Edward Scissorhands. Have you seen that movie? You're like, oh yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, just no response from you guys sometimes. You're just like... All right, so that's the laparoscopic. So in laparoscopic, you're going to see a series of small scars. With open, you're going to see a couple big scars. Now, if someone has had a liver transplant or a liver surgery, what they'll typically have is we call the Mercedes symbol. Okay, they're going to have a huge cut here and then two cuts down here. So without the circle, it'll it's the shape of the Mercedes symbol. Say again? For like liver, especially like liver transplant, we'll always have that. Want to look for veins? Now we're not talking about just veins that you see. Oh, someone's got little veins in there, like Like, you can see, like, someone has veins on their arm. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about, oh, look, you can see a little bit of a blue line. That's a vein. What we're talking about is veins that are big and puffing out through their abdominal wall. The word for that is caput medusa. Now, for your bonus cool points, who is Medusa? Oh, go ahead. Okay, so she was in Greek mythology. She was a gorgon. She had snakes for hair. And so when we say caput medusa, we mean head of Medusa, because those veins will actually look like a snake. It's a sign... What? It's a sign of liver disease. And then we're going to look for hernias. Now, a hernia is a weakening of a fascia wall that allows gut to push up through it. So common hernias are umbilical hernias. Now, what I'd like for you to do sometime is poke your finger in your belly button and then squeeze your gut. Squeeze your abdominal muscles, and what you'll feel is you'll feel something squeeze in on your finger. That's fascia that's actually squeezing down. And the purpose of that fascia is to prevent stuff, your guts, from pushing out through that little umbilical ring, the leftover scar from your umbilical cord. Now, there's also other areas where people can get them. Men have inguinal rings, where our testes started up here as ovaries, and then because we had a Y chromosome, the Y chromosome turned our proto-gonads into testes, and then they traveled down through those rings and into the scrotum. So where those rings are, men can get hernias down there. There's also an area down in here where kind of the abdominal wall connects to the pelvis and leg, and you can get femoral hernias. There's also something called an incisional hernia, which usually happens after a person's had surgery. If the fascia layers don't heal up correctly in the scar, even though the skin is connected over the scar, sometimes the intestine can push through that, and so you'll have intestine pushing up into the skin. So those are several different kinds of hernias. Yes? What do they look like? It looks like a little, outpouching of skin. Now, what you want to know if a person has a hernia is, can you push it in, or if you can't push it in? If you can push it in, it's called reducible. If you can't push it in, that's called irreducible, and it's a sign that it could become ischemic. So if a person has an irreducible hernia, they need to get surgery as soon as possible. If it's reducible, they can live with that for years. It just might be uncomfortable or cosmetically not as pleasing. In our modern good ab society, well, that could just be the kiss of death. You're never going to get on MTV Spring Break like that.